Welcome back to the program. The city of Jerusalem is more than a city. It is a state of mind. It represents almost an anthropomorphic version of the 3,000-year story of Western civilization. Yet it seems strangely disconnected from the modern world, while at the same time it's ground zero for so many of the 21st century's problems. Perhaps today, as it has been so many times in our history, as Jerusalem goes, so goes the world. We're going to talk about Jerusalem today with my guest, Simon Sebag Montefiore. He is a world-renowned historian, the author of books about Potemkin and Stalin. He's a fellow of the Royal Society of Literature, and it is my pleasure to welcome him here to the program today to talk about his new book, Jerusalem, the Biography. Simon Sebag Montefiore, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
It is remarkable what a city of contrast Jerusalem is, that did almost everything you can say about it, you can somehow find the opposite in that 3,000-year history.
Yes, that's right. I mean, one can literally say, and I think one can say this about the book as well, is that all humanity is there. This is a story of unbelievable tragedy, of slaughter, of bigotry, but also of the most exquisite sanctity, of holiness, of poetry, of peace. It's a city of peace, but it's definitely the city of war as well. And in many ways, it reflects not just what's happening in the Middle East, but it reflects what's happening outside the Middle East in the wider world as well. And that's one of its stranger characteristics.
Expand on that a little bit, because it's also the story of empires throughout history.
Absolutely. I mean, in one sense, you can tell this story, you can read this story as just a saga of great kings, of conquerors, of empires, of prophets and poets and all of that. There are all the great statesmen you could possibly imagine, from Caligula to Winston Churchill, from Harry Truman and Barack Obama, back to Lincoln and back into world history to all the Roman emperors and so on, and Cleopatra. They all have a role in Jerusalem, all of them, and that's on top of, you know, Jesus, Muhammad, Abraham, who all have a role too. So in many ways, this is a story of conquerors and empires, and you can read it like that. But I also wanted to tell about a Jerusalem that isn't so often seen, which is not just the religious Jerusalem. One thinks of Jerusalem often as a rather dark city, veiled, dreary, sad, unhappy, slightly joyless. But I also wanted to write about a Jerusalem of love affairs, of romance, of music, of food, of women. And women have played a huge role in Jerusalem all the way through its history. So, you know, you can read this book two ways. You can look at it as a saga, the greatest story ever told, or you can look at it as a study of identity, of empire, of how religions and how holiness develops. And that's the fun of it for me, was working on it, was it had these two sides all along.
There's also the aspect to which Jerusalem seems to have an effect on so many people, that you can't visit Jerusalem, even if you're a secularist or an atheist or whatever, without having some reaction to it.
That's right. I think that it's holy even for the most secular of us, if you like. I mean, that's why I also call it the universal city, because that's for the secular people. Because for secular people, Jerusalem seems to belong to everyone. I mean, we all feel that Jerusalem is an international city that should belong to all of us. We all feel a little bit of it is ours, whether we're Christian or Muslim or Jewish, or whether we're just completely atheist. Somehow, it still belongs to the world, and that's why it's the universal city. But, of course, that's a very dangerous thing, because everyone who goes to Jerusalem has a vision of what they expect Jerusalem to be like. And more often than not, they're often disappointed, and they want to change Jerusalem and remake it in a vision of Jerusalem that they think is more authentic. And that's before you even get to the fact that Jerusalem is also a heavenly city as well as a terrestrial one.
Right. And in that sense, it's also, as I said in the introduction, a kind of state of mind that everybody does go there with a preconception. And even when they don't want to change it, and even when it doesn't quite live up to that preconception, it becomes something equally powerful.
Well, it's both infinitely fascinating and attractive and beautiful, but it's also repulsive, repellent. And many people who go there never want to go there again. Many are repelled by some part or other of the shrines in Jerusalem. Often one Christian sect is absolutely appalled by another Christian sect's shrines in the city. And you're right, it's a state of mind. It exists in all of our minds, and that's one of the powers of Jerusalem. One may wonder, how did it get into our minds? Why is it in our minds? And that's one of the things that are discussed in the book. Partly it's the human need for holiness, the inheritance, the heritage of holiness. But partly, of course, it's because of the Bible, the book that's in all that we all know so well, even if we don't believe. And Jerusalem is really a book. The Bible is really Jerusalem's biography, and so it is the Bible that's brought Jerusalem to the center of world politics, world culture, and the minds of even the most unreligious people.
Part of that also, though, is this history that you were talking about before, and the fact that it is a city, even beyond religion, that has been touched by this 3,000-year arc of history, and it's impossible to be in Jerusalem without having a sense of that, even separate and apart from any of the religious aspect.
Yes, I mean, it's been ruled by so many people. And, you know, one of the challenges of writing this book is the biggest challenge I've ever written, by the way, and a most exciting and most daunting project for this reason, because... Really, there have been histories before which have just been sort of lists of which conqueror conquered it next. And there have been books which talk about the theology very well of Jerusalem. But there's never been a book that does all these things and looks at each of the empires and goes inside them, what were they like. And that's been the challenge here, because I've had to read and study and write about Babylonians and Ottomans and the British, of course, and the Persians and the Parthians and the Assyrians and the Canaanites and so on. So in itself, it's an amazing challenge for a historian. But it's also, all of this has had effect on Jerusalem. Every stone has been used and reused by different empires. And that's a very exciting thing. It means that every building has a history in many layers, and not just in layers. It's often said that Jerusalem has layers of history, but in fact it's more complicated than that. It's more like a woven tapestry.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are woven into each other.
And the way you've approached this is not through the bricks and mortar of the city so much, but really through the people.
Well, I think as I said, there are many books on Jerusalem. Most of them are about particular eras. Most of them are about the Israel-Palestine conflict, or the Crusades, or Jesus Christ period. There are literally only one or two in print in English that actually do what I've done. But I looked at those books and I thought that many of them were quite, they were either had a case of one thing after another, one damn thing after another, as we say in England.
Mm-hmm.
Or they didn't really give you an idea of a city where people lived. And it was just about buildings, and I think that can be quite boring and quite deathly. And I wanted to write about the people that made Jerusalem. I thought that was more exciting. So I had the challenge of trying to make this readable. I wanted it to be both scholarly and readable. And I decided to do it through people. So each section of the book, to make it very accessible, because there's so many foreign names and so on, is each section is a biography of somebody. You might have heard of some of them, like Jesus Christ or Herod the Great or Winston Churchill, but some of them you may not have heard of. And that's also, part of the fun of the book, is that, but this makes it very readable for people who normally would not be able to wade through a chapter on the Babylonian culture, for example.
Right. The other aspect is that it accentuates something we touched on a little while ago, which is the degree to which people have been changed by Jerusalem.
Yes. Yes. I mean, there are many people coming and going to Jerusalem. It's always been a settler city. It's always been a city that people come to. And it's been destroyed and depopulated and repopulated so many times that people are always settling there. And it'll be a surprise to people who read endlessly about Jewish settlements now in modern Israel, that there are many, many times when Jerusalem was completely depopulated and filled with Arab or Muslim settlers from all over the Arab world in just the same way. So even its present history is very much part of its past. And that's part of these, that's also an interesting part of the story.
One of the things you talked about is that in some ways the city is more Jewish now than it's ever been.
Yes. Yeah. It's now more Jewish in population than probably it was ever was, even in its glory days of the Herod the Great period, when it was also a colossal and majestic city of amazing beauty. But nowadays, partly because they've expanded the borders, partly because of new settlements and new suburbs built often for political reasons, but often not for political reasons too. This city is now more Jewish than it's ever been, and in some ways that's a wonderful thing.
There's also the sense that when you look at the religious aspect of it, that all of the religions that have grown out of Jerusalem have always depended in some way or have been impacted by the city being destroyed.
That's right. And in fact, the city being destroyed, I mean, it's been totally destroyed twice. That's also very much part of its holiness, because far from destroying its holiness, this simply intensified the mysticism of its sanctity. And the two times it's been destroyed have both in their ways made it much, much holier, and not just for the Jews, but for the Christians and ultimately for Islam too. So that's one of the stranger parts of Jerusalem.
It also gives it that quality of much more of a living city, that it is always able to kind of re-evolve and reinvent itself.
Oh yeah, I mean one thinks of it almost as a sort of expects it to be like a museum. In fact, it's so living. It's a very vibrant place, but it is also a very angry place. If you live there and spend time there, probably you don't notice that if you're just a visitor. But if you spend time in Jerusalem, you realize it's uneasy. It's angry. It's messy. There's endless conflicts, and not just between the Israelis and the Palestinians, but between secular and religious Jews, for example, and amongst all the Christian sects, of course, are all sort of at war with each other still in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
And violence has been, as we've touched on, violence has been so much a part of the city, endlessly.
Though ironically, I mean, when I look at the history, and I look at the whole 3,000-year history, this period is not particularly violent by Jerusalem standards. In fact, it's been quite a peaceful, the last 60 years or 50 years, it's been quite peaceful by Jerusalem standards. One of the things that I discovered, I didn't know about, was that, you know, this region, Palestine, Judea, Galilee, or whatever you want to call it, has been in almost perpetual revolt against its rulers for the last 2,000 years. I mean, they were revolting against the Byzantines. They were revolting. You know, Jews and Samaritans were constantly revolting against Rome and the Byzantium. And then after the Arabs came, the Arab tribes were constantly rebelling against all the Muslim rulers, just as they are today against Jewish rulers. So, you know, again, this period is not something exceptional at all. In fact, it's very typical.
Also, the degree to which it is the center of all this apocalyptic kind of end days talk that we hear.
Yes, that's very interesting. I mean, you know, if this is something that is hard to understand for, you know, non-religious people. And for non-religious people, they just think, is this just gobbledygook, something out of the Da Vinci Code? But for religious people, and I mean not just Jews, of course, but, you know, I mean Muslims, but of course many of the, you know, evangelical Christians in America believe strongly that the second coming, you know, is imminent. What they mean by imminent, it varies enormously, of course. But for Jews, you know, the Third Temple, for Muslims, the coming of the Mahdi, the Chosen One, all of these things will happen on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. So the apocalypse will happen there, whether you believe it's now or a long way off. For a believer of the three great Abrahamic religions, it will happen, and it will happen there. And that, of course, makes the city very hard to trade in a political deal, because it's the venue of the ultimate holiness in your faith.
And of course, today we have to think about it in terms of being a capital of potentially two states.
That's right. There's also a political thing. I mean, to the religious significance of Jerusalem, in the late 19th century and early 20th century were added nationalism as well, and it became a national icon, a national talisman, if you like, for the Jews and for the Palestinians. And that's a whole nother challenge. So that's a whole nother thing that has to be negotiated. And, you know, being Jerusalem, there are so many plans about how to divide it. And, of course, the details matter enormously in this city. And, frankly, you know, it's a terrible challenge. But if there's will, it's possible.
One of the things that happens is this Jerusalem syndrome that affects some people that go there. Talk a little about that.
Well, Jerusalem syndrome is suffered particularly by Christian pilgrims. Though I must say, I would say that there are many examples of pilgrims of all three faiths mm-hmm. who have displayed the Jerusalem syndrome. And indeed, I argue in the book that sort of many of the conquerors and political governors have caught it as well. But in its real psychological form, it's a disappointment, a huge disappointment, caused by the difference between the sort of celestial hope of Jerusalem and the messy, chaotic reality, which some breaks some people's hearts and drive others mad. And they go to they're taken to a hospital, a mental hospital in Jerusalem, which specializes in this. And there are always one or two patients in there who believe that they are normally John the Baptist or the Virgin Mary.
One of the things about it that is so fascinating today is that it exists as this world city, this world center, and yet its ancientness, if you will, is so disconnected from what we see today as modernity.
That's right. I mean, you've touched on something interesting there. Of course, Jerusalem is again now the center of the world. One of the things about the city is that it is the media capital of the Middle East. There are more film crews, more 24-hour television coverage of Jerusalem than any other city in the Middle East. And in fact, any other city outside the few great capitals of the world, New York and LA and so on. And the fact is that that it's the most over-scrutinized city in the world. So that's part of it. So in that sense, it's a very modern city with very modern issues at stake. The Arab Spring, you know, the Iran-America rivalry and so on, the Israel-Palestine thing, all these are the very modern crises, in fact. But it's also ancient, and ancient stuff matters, not only for its own sake, but to these modern debates as well. So it really is truly a mixture where ancient and modern not only clash, but are part of each other and complement each other.
Simon Sebag Montefiore. The book is Jerusalem, the Biography. Simon, I thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you so much. Really nice talking to you.